Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated.
Morning. Morning, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. Anne Marie Phillips, court-appointed amicus counsel for pro se appellant Benjamin Shipley. The Fair Labor Standards Act mandates that Mr. Shipley is paid a fair wage for the good he manufactures that are sold to private Pennsylvania corporation Woolrich, Inc. A primary purpose of the Fair Labor Standards Act, as articulated by Congress on the face of the Act itself, is to ensure that unfair competition is prevented, specifically that no private entity utilizes low-wage or slave labor in an unfair competitive manner to manufacture goods that compete in the private market.
Does it say that in the Fair Labor Standards Act?
On the face of the Fair Labor Standards Act, Your Honor.
It says no slave labor?
It says no unfair competition through the use of sub-minimum wage, low wage, or slave labor. Slave labor is not mentioned on the face of the Fair Labor Standards Act, but that is the purpose, Your Honor, to ensure that low wage and slave labor is not utilized. Here, Woolrich, Inc., private Pennsylvania corporation, entered into a contract with the Federal Prison Industries for low wage inmate labor and sold these goods for an extraordinary profit back to the government.
If we have the standing to raise the unfair competition interest?
He does. Under the Fair Labor Standards Act, he has a civil right of action to sue for fair wages for goods he has manufactured that are sold to a private entity.
That's a different question. You're raising a specific issue of the competitive injury alleged against the sale and commerce. That's a different question than whether he has an action for his wages, isn't it?
But the Fair Labor Standards Act guarantees a fair wage to all employees.
So far, you're fine. Then you went on and said he has an action because the purpose of it is to prevent unfair competition.
He has an action because he wasn't paid a fair wage for the manufacture of his goods that compete in the private market.
You're going to have to come back to that, I think. I don't think you can get there on the competitive interest. I think you have to come back to the question of whether he has an action for his...
Is Your Honor pointing to the case law in Hale and out of the Ninth Circuit where the
Let's
court says...
Let's look at Hinthorne. Well, since it's in this circuit and it is actually binding, and whatever the Ninth Circuit did is not binding anywhere out in this world. This part of the world.
Well, in Hinthorne, Your Honor, there is a clear distinction between the application of Hinthorne in a services-based case, which is where Hinthorne governs, versus this case, which is a goods-based case. And the difference lies in the different economic value of a service versus
a good. Hinthorne's principal distinction was between work release and prison pay.
But in a services-based context, Your Honor, never before...
Did they really discuss it in terms of the services-based context? Or but, I say they. Did we really discuss it?
Actually,
when I wrote that opinion...
You could say I.
wasn't I talking about...
You didn't have to, Your Honor, because never before had a prison made good. Since the enactment of the Federal Prison Industries, Inc., never before had this case had to deal with a situation in which a prison inmate manufactured good was sold in the private market. It is illegal under the very statute that creates the Federal Prison Industries.
Well, isn't that the solution, then? You have a lot of discussion about fair competition and protecting competitors. Isn't that satisfied by the criminal statute?
That is a solution. It is not the only solution.
Well, why is it necessary in order to prevent unfair competition that the prisoner here get a higher wage? Why couldn't the solution either be to prosecute the evildoers here or to require the private company to pay more to the government?
Even if we do prosecute on a criminal level or require Woolrich to pay more, that does not preclude Mr. Shipley from getting a fair wage under the Fair Labor Standards
Act. That's not the question I ask. The question I ask is you're really arguing completely from policy that having a substandard wage it leads to unfair competition, right?
It's recognized in the face of the Fair Labor Standards
Act. I understand. I understand where it's recognized. But the question is, what's the remedy for it?
There are multiple remedies.
Well, why should one of the multiple remedies be that the prisoner have a higher wage rather than that the private company pay more to the government?
It's not an either-or scenario, Your Honor. The prisoner can get a fair wage because he is standing under the Fair Labor Standards Act, and should the Department of Justice...
He only has standing if he's an employee, right?
Correct, but he
is... And let me just read you the following sentence from Henthorne. You tell me what part of it is unclear. We hold that a prerequisite to finding that an inmate has employee standing under the FLSA is that the prisoner has freely contracted with a non-prison employer to sell his labor.
That,
that's the part I was referring to earlier.
That test, Your Honors, makes sense in a services-based case.
Well, but leave aside whether it makes sense. Is there any part of that statement that's ambiguous or that suggests that there's any qualification in any other kind of case?
By the nature of the case itself presented, you have to look to the nature, the economic nature of the labor provided. The economic nature of labor for services versus goods is inherently different. Henthorne is good law in a services-based case.
And I don't see anything in Henthorne that restricts it to services-based cases.
The economic nature of a service itself restricts the ruling of Henthorne.
Look at the case for a moment, counsel.
I understand.
Recalling that it's binding upon us, and do you see anything in there that...
Your Honor, I have read your case top to bottom. I have read every case that any circuit has put forth on the intersection of prison labor and the Fair Labor Standards Act. And what repeatedly hit me over and over again is that these cases continually addressed prison services.
Well, that's not, is that true also of the Ninth Circuit's opinion?
The Ninth Circuit decision in Hale did address prison-made goods. The en banc decision overturning the Ninth Circuit's ruling is mistaken. And it's
not that there is no other circuit's opinion. There is one, and it's the Ninth Circuit en banc, and it goes completely against you.
That decision decided a case with Arizona state prisoners, not federal prisoners. There is a distinction. But the en banc decision did overturn, but did so incorrectly. It read into the Fair Labor Standards Act a restriction that is not in there. The Fair Labor Standards Act does not exclude prisoners from getting a fair wage for their labor. The Ninth Circuit's en banc decision read into that statute what Congress never intended. This court has recognized that prisoners can get a fair wage for their labor.
We recognize that only in the context of what is commonly referred to as work release, where there is a contract between the prisoner and an outside employer.
But that
the prisoner is not working for the prison system.
But, Your Honor, that decision doesn't make sense in a goods-based case because the economic value of a good follows that good throughout its life. And in this case, the economic value of the good manufactured by Shipley is clear. It touches the private market. We do not have an exclusive market scenario that Congress contemplated when it created the federal prison industries. In that scenario, where prisoners manufacture goods that are sold to the government, those goods have no economic value. Therefore, that labor manufacturing the goods has no economic value.
The fact that the government, that the other elements of the law restrict the market does not mean that there would not be a market absent restriction.
But Congress has created the fiction in which those goods don't touch the private market. So respecting that fiction, then prisoners would not get a fair wage for that.
Wasn't this all under a government subcontract here?
This is a government...
The eventual purchaser here is the government also, right?
But Woolrich is earning a 2,000% profit off of those goods, and that profit is utilized in the private market to subsidize the goods that it manufactures and sells to private consumers. Therefore, these goods that Mr. Shipley is manufacturing, yes, ultimately being sold to the government, are allowing a private entity to earn private profit off of those goods that implicate directly the free market. Therefore, his goods impact the free market, have
Why doesn't any prisoner's goods, in Henthorne, the prisoner worked at the Naval Center, right?
He did doing janitorial and ranch
That's
hand
right.
services.
And if he weren't doing that, they would have employed somebody from the private sector to do that, wouldn't they?
Arguably they could have.
Yes, so this is unfair competition with the company in the private sector that provides janitorial services, isn't it?
I would agree. Most economists would, too. The question, though...
This is really not an economics question. We're in law here.
But the
question is, why if you're right, why shouldn't that rule have been employed in Hemthorne?
Because Congress has recognized there is a public policy reason to employ prisoners. They have said that when prisoners work, and that work is for the government, it is an exclusive market scenario in which prisoner goods...
Which language are you relying on for that?
This is in section 18 U.S.C. 4122, creating the fair labor state, creating the federal prison industries. If we look to subsection A, the last sentence, these goods are not for sale to the public in competition with private enterprise. In establishing the federal prison industries, Congress recognized that they wanted to put prisoners to work for public policy reasons, but that those goods could not and should not compete in the fair market because it would create an unfair competitive advantage to those corporations utilizing that low-wage labor.
Yeah, so that's a different statute. That's not the statute you're relying on here. You're relying on the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act.
Yes, the Fair Labor Standards Act creates a civil right of action to get a fair wage when goods are being sold in the private market.
That's why I'm asking, where's the words in the private market? In the Fair Labor Standards Act. Why isn't, under your rule, why shouldn't the Hemthorne rule have been different?
Because when you look at the economic nature of a service, the economic nature of a service dies when the service is completed. It doesn't go anywhere. You look to the economic value of
the
labor that provides
actually,
that service.
Actually, if we want to talk about the economics, it has a ripple effect throughout the economy. If the fact is that instead of employing a private janitor, you employ the federal government, you reduce the wages available to the and profit to the private company. That private company then can hire fewer people. Those people pay less taxes, they make less consumption. That ripples through the entire economy just as well. It doesn't
there's
die.
There's a real difference in a good and service in that regard.
The difference is this. Congress has to balance the public policy benefit of employing prisoners versus the economic harm that that employment can cause in the market. With a services-based case, whether that service truly impacts the private market in an unfair competitive way is an analysis the court has to go through. And this court specifically set up the tests in Hemthorne to do that. In a goods-based case, if the good is being sold directly to the government, there is no impact on the private market. But whereas here, the good is sold in the private market, there is an economic impact. Mr. Shipley's labor has value, and it has value that should be compensated fairly under the Fair Labor Standards Act.
So the goods received by the government, in your view, can go nowhere?
If Woolrich was merely charging cost for the manufacture and transportation of those goods, then arguably Woolrich is not making a profit that could impact the private market, and Mr. Shipley's labor has no real economic value in the private market. So arguably in that scenario, then Woolrich is a mere pass-through and Mr. Shipley would not be due a fair wage. The only allegation we have in this complaint, however, is what's actually alleged in the complaint.
Why don't we make Woolrich pay the money back to the United States? This excess profit that you're talking about, why isn't that the solution? Why is the solution that the prisoner get more money?
Regardless of what other statutes or other punishments Woolrich may suffer or may fall under, the Fair Labor Standards Act provides Mr. Shipley a civil right of action to sue for a fair wage.
But you keep conflating that into an action to vindicate the effect on competition. And if you go, you're familiar with competitive litigation over competition, and you know who has standing in that, and it isn't somebody outside the competitive market. When you have a regulation that is designed to protect competition, it's generally the consumer. Now, there are circumstances under which it can be the competitor, but do you know of any where it's somebody outside those two groups who is said to be within the zone of protection created by the statute or regulation? It doesn't look like there's any prudential standing to assert that claim.
But to hold otherwise in this case would be to ignore one of the primary purposes of the Fair Labor Standards Act, and that is to prevent unfair competition.
We're always told that when we say somebody doesn't have standing. But
He does have standing.
The fact that he may not have standing does not affect the validity or invalidity of the statute or even the possibility that there's some other remedy. But it's hard to see how he has standing to assert a competitive injury.
He has standing because he was not paid a fair wage for the employment
right,
that
he did. That's a standing for a claim under the Fair Labor Standards Act. But it has nothing to do with the competitive market.
But when addressing whether a prisoner should get a fair wage, which this court has said may or may not be the case, they have standing.
It will be the case where there is a freely contracting with an outside entity, where he's working for the prisoner.
Which is very logical in a services-based case, but in a goods-based case, you look at the economic value of the
good. I think we've hit the point where we're going around in the same circle for the fourth or fifth time, and your time is up. If necessary, we'll give you back some for a
thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel.
Did a good job running up the hill against precedent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Wynn Kelly, and I represent the federal appellees in this action. As the court has identified, the core issue in this case is whether Mr. Shipley, a federal prisoner performing work for Unicor, qualifies as an employee under the Fair Labor Standards Act. This court, in Henthorne versus Department of the Navy, set forth a bright-line two-part test to determine whether a prisoner could, in fact, qualify as an employee. As Judge Garland pointed, the first prong is whether the work performed was voluntary and not compulsory. The second prong is also whether the wages that the prisoner earns were set and paid for by an entity other than the Bureau of Prisons. Mr. Shipley has conceded that he fails both these prongs in his complaint. In Joint Appendix at page 163, Mr. Shipley, in an attachment to his complaint, notes that his work was not voluntary and, in fact, was compelled. Similarly, on page 61 and 63 of the Joint Appendix in his complaint, he notes that at all times relevant, his wages were set and paid by Unicor. This court has had occasion to revisit its holding in Henthorne in the Castro versus Reno, a 1996 case where federal inmates brought an action under the Fair Labor Standards Act. This court per curiam summarily affirmed the dismissal. In that case, the government entity was the same one we have here, Unicor. Federal prison industry.
What do you say to Ms. Phillips' point that none of those cases involved services which were provided to a private company that then provided another product to the government? Those cases involved services, and that this one involves working for a private company.
First, the holding in Henthorne, Your Honor, has no distinction between goods or services. Second, in Nicastro versus Reno, the fact that
you have an economic analysis of this distinction?
Do I have an economic?
Well, your opposing counsel thought that there was an economic difference between providing services and providing products.
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that there's any economic distinction between the value placed on goods, the value placed on services. If I think back to law school, the only difference I can think of is
back further than law school, probably.
The only difference I can think of is the Uniform Commercial Code, which clearly has no application here as far as the distinction.
Well, what about the distinction that this is provided to a contractor who then marks up above the sub minimum wage that the prison is actually paying the prisoner? That's different than Henthorne, where the person worked directly for the Navy rather than through an intermediary.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the relationship at issue is between the inmate and his employer in both Henthorne and in this case, that is the prison. And the fact that the contract upon which he worked was for another entity has no bearing on Mr. Shipley's relationship with the person for whom he is performing the work or with the entity.
But an amicus point is that when you provide the work directly for a government agency like the Navy, you're not interfering with the private market, while when you provide it to a contractor like Woolrich, you're competing with, I don't know, Old Navy or some other company that also makes shirts.
That market, though, was set when the Department of Defense sought bids and sought contracts. And as that process is where the market is defined. And the fact that Woolrich, like any other bidder, chose to utilize Unicor for the labor has no bearing on the market that's set between the government and the potential bidders for that contract. So I don't think that the fact that Woolrich is sort of in the chain where the government agency end user, Department of Defense, is the one who set the market has any bearing on Mr. Shipley's relationship with Unicor.
Well, it would be, I mean, it's certainly going to be an advantage to any contractor to use prison labor because of the price, and that would be unfair to another company that can't, and of course also unfair to employees who are not prison laborers but who are in the free market trying to sell their labor, competing with somebody who's willing to sew on the buttons for sub-minimum wage, not willing but compelled to.
Yes, Your Honor, and while that issue is addressed in the bidding process where this labor is available to everyone, and as the court has already discussed, it's Mr. Shipley would not have standing to question that arrangement. The entity that would have standing would be a competitor, similar to what happened in the Coalition of Government Procurement case out of the Sixth Circuit, where furniture companies got together and sued because they felt that Unicor had gone beyond the limits of their statutory mandate and were competing unfairly with the private market.
Did they win?
No, Unicor won.
So it's not that. I'm not familiar with that. Did they? I mean, I have it right in front of me, but I'm not sufficiently recollecting it. Was the ground for the problem that they couldn't sue under the statute, or that they just couldn't prove the merits of their case?
The grounds were that they couldn't prove the merits of their case. It was more an examination of whether the process by which Unicor had sought to expand their furniture making process. But what's most relevant to this case is the Sixth Circuit examined whether the process by which Unicor was manufacturing furniture that was then given to a private entity who was constructing government buildings for the government, and therefore temporarily had title, and there was money exchanged, that was that arrangement was fine, and that even though title had passed to a private sector, a private company, that where the government agency is the end user, that the arrangement was fine.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Questions?
Thank you.
We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal if you'd like, counsel.
I won't take the 2 full minutes, but just to address a point, Mr. Shipley is an employee here. Whether he is compelled to do this work or regardless of who is compensating him, Mr. Shipley's goods, the goods that he is manufacturing, in this case sold to Woolrich, have inherent economic value. Because all federal prisoners are mandated to work, to hold that, unless the prisoner is engaged in some voluntary service, he does not fall under the Fair Labor Standards Act, is to read a restriction into the act that Congress did not write.
Again, textually, how do you resolve this problem? So he has to be an employee, right? And he has to have an employer. And in Hemthorne, we said he's not an employee. Or put it another way, the only employer he has is the government. Even if we were to accept the distinction that you're talking about between service and not, and even if we were to accept the problem of selling the goods into the to a middleman, and then you still have the problem of employee and employer. Who's his employer here?
The Federal Prison Industries is his employer. Simply because he's compelled to do this work does not negate that his work has economic value in the free market. He is due a fair wage under the Fair Labor Standards Act because that good has that economic value.
Would you have had a better case or if he had said in writing to make it clear, I want to make it clear I am voluntarily doing this work because I know that my real employer is not the government. This is a sham arrangement. A real employer is Woolworth, and I do this voluntarily.
Your Honor, he may. He may have had better standing because as he did plead in the complaint, he voluntarily applied for that position within the manufacturing plant. So had he alleged that his true employer was Woolrich because Woolrich was governing his work, he may have had a better chance under Henthorne. But I don't think we have to throw out Henthorne here for the Shipley case. Henthorne is a good analysis when you have services-based good, when you have a services-based case.
Well, I think we have used your time up again, counsel. We thank you for your...
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
...public-spirited and professional role as a pro bono counsel. It makes our system work to have attorneys with the kind of attitude and professionalism that you've displayed. So we thank you, and we thank your firm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.